Hello everyone and welcome back to a new episode of The Quill. I am your host Raul. I'm glad to have you here with me and I hope we'll have an interesting little episode, because as you can tell, we're gonna talk about 1942. To be more precise, we're right after the win of Romania in Transnistria and Moldova. Romania was also gifted some small territories there from Germany, but Transylvania is still under Hungarian rule. So, you know, our story takes place in Transylvania, specifically here in Cluj-Napoca, or as the Hungarians name it, basically Kolozsváros. So if this is just your first episode, we're talking on a story based on my grandfather's life. He lived near Cluj in a small village, and by the time he was 5, his father deserted him in the 1940 due to the fact that Hungarians were killing Romanians left and right and were trying to ethnic cleanse them by either changing their names or downright kill them and torture them and do whatever. And that was widespread in, you know, Transylvania back then, because of course they wanted to assimilate the people and to ingrain their culture, and what faster way to do that than terrorize everyone there. So, you know, they did all that, and a whole lot of massacres and tragedies happened in many places. Of course, we don't know all of them, because why would they admit to any of it, right? We're talking here about war crimes, basically, and they're just gonna, you know, not actually pay for it, because no one really paid for most of these crimes committed. And I say this because, for example, we're gonna talk about it a bit more later, about what horrific crimes happened specifically on Romanian territories these past years. Because, as you well know, while this always going on, also at the same time there was of course the Holocaust, and both the Hungarians and the Romanians took part in it. And this, of course, is a horrific, horrific event. But here we're talking about Transylvania and a small child that is left fatherless with a mother and 5 or 4 brothers and sisters living on their own, trying to fend themselves in the middle of the war next to the biggest city in Romania, and one of the biggest cities in what was Romania back then and is Romania now, but was under Hungarian rule back then. So you can only imagine that living the life of a peasant back then was nothing short of fucked up and crazy. But well, as tragic as his life began, because no one really asks for war if they're sane, and especially not children. I don't think children can ask for war, or if they do, they're just being manipulated by people to think and act a certain way. So let's remember that horrific things still happen. Here we have Romania, as I said, in its 1942 glory, so to speak, before the pushback and the counterattack of the Russians, because let's remember that there was a whole lot of stuff going down in history, and especially back then. So, you know, nothing beats the tragedies that happened in World War II, whether we're talking the Rape of Nanking, that the Japanese still try to sweep under the rug, or the Holocaust that Romania tries to sweep under the rug and has been trying for years. And with that said, let's get into 1942. Romania was in a comfortable position, so to speak, having done three trade deals with Nazi Germany. They were basically, actually, they were literally the fuel to the fire that was Germany, having most of the oil and crude oil and crude oil products come from Romania, since Russia basically failed. And well, Germany basically failed in taking the Russian and the Russian oil reserves that they had to the south, or a bit to the east of Transnistria, this place here, somewhere to the east here, there were some oil reserves that the Russians basically burned. Because as we saw last time in a video, and as we talked about last time, the Russians, when they were defeated, they would usually burn everything, so they wouldn't let, you know, the opposition, so to speak, the opposite army have any kind of or sort of advantage. So they did the same with the oil reserves there. So when Germany got there, they didn't find anything, and sending a lot of oil and equipment was pretty hard, because it got to winter, and we all know how harsh winters are in Russia, and why Napoleon failed and others, Europeans, failed. I'm not talking about Genghis Khan, obviously, or Alexander the Great. But anyway, so that was the kind of situation the World War was in right now. Basically, America entered the war last fall, and now it really escalates, because, you know, Germany still tries to raid Britain, they still try to do a lot of things. So it's just, if you read about it, it's just a fuck ton of information and a ton of, you know, problems that occurred and killing and stuff like that. Well, you know, I don't want to really think about it, because it's absolutely terrifying. So with that in mind, let me show you a video. This is a video from 1942 regarding a small place here in Cluj, and this is how basically the peasants lived even under Hungarian rule. As you can see, this is Hungarian video. So it's quite interesting to see that people were still on and about dancing, having, you know, parties and stuff like that on the weekends, especially on Sunday, you know, after you go to church and stuff like that. And here you can see like Romanian peasants dancing to traditionally Romanian music. So these are kind of our traditional dances. And to see this in the turmoil and in the life of a peasant, even though they were in the middle of the war, is kind of uplifting, because it shows a bit of faith in what is the darkness of any and all war. So here we have just a bunch of people trying to live what can amount to the best life they've got in a shitty situation under, you know, a rule of a foreign country. They might not even speak the language, and you know, they still do the best of a bad day. But of course, these are just a few moments in their lives, because a few kilometers or miles away, John was trying to live his fullest life too, being 7 years old in the summer of 1942. That meant that he had to attend school. This was the first of the 3 years he spent in school. Of course, being Romanian, born Romanian, speaking Romanian, being taught Romanian, he suddenly had to go to a school that was teaching only in Hungarian. Since Transylvania was under Hungarian rule, he was basically forced to learn Hungarian at 7, which is, you know, traumatizing after your father leaves you deserted, and you have to both take care of, you know, yourself and the place you live at, since there is no other father figure, and your brothers too have to do the best they can to try to bring in money or to, you know, milk the cows and do a lot of yard work and, you know, especially like really heavy duty work, since they didn't really have like many tractors like they have now, and the equipment that they might have now that would make things simpler. You know, back then you had to pray for basically rain, because otherwise, unless you had a ultra modern irrigation system, you wouldn't get any like anything out of it. So, you know, it's tough being a child having nothing but the pants on you and the t-shirt or a shirt, and having to work for, you know, for a living at that age. Even if it's just a little, you have to actually put on the work, a work many of us, I don't think, could do at that age, because many of us were basically sheltered by life, luckily, and by our parents, and we weren't let to spend hours upon hours on fields during the summer under, you know, immense heat, and to be, you know, get dark skinned and tanned from work. My grandfather was very tanned even to his last days, because working fields and working, you know, agriculture all your life to try to sustain yourself and try to save yourself from starvation, because obviously the Hungarian army only cared for one thing and one thing only, and that was for them to, and their, you know, Hungarian rule to do well, so they wouldn't dwindle, they wouldn't really give a shit about Romanians in any other way than they must learn Hungarian, they must change their name, and they must abide to our ruling. So it was something terrifying, I must say. And he told me about this, he talked about it many, many times, having to run on fields around Cluj, trying to basically escape and, you know, find your way back home, because there were either German or Hungarian like soldier, and you didn't know who to trust, or if you even had a family the next day, because who knows when they might just, someone would, I don't know, start something, try to riot, or they displeased, you know, the so-called conquerors, and if they lash out, there's nothing for you to do, literally nothing for you. So it's terrifying to think about that, because even in 1942, as nice as Germany seemed to be to Romania, to give them some of their territories back, especially in the east, as I just showed you here, they were still just shitty ass assholes. And while the footage you've just seen on the screen, if you're watching live or on YouTube, might suggest that, oh, what a great joy there was in Romania when the German army answered our country, well, it wasn't quite that. And here we have, for example, a very, very amazing recording in, made in secret in 1942, and I'd like us to listen to this. It's in, you know, German, I think, but I'm gonna read what's on the screen and we're gonna talk about it. Unless, you know, you understand like German, which is great, but if you do, I'm sorry. So basically, this is all naturally, was inevitable. You see, I had a conversation with Molotov, a Soviet minister at that time, and it was absolutely certain that Molotov departed with the decision to begin a war, and I dismissed the decision to begin a war, and I dismissed him, the decision to impossible, to forestall him. This was the only, because the demands that man brought up, they're clearly aimed to rule Europe in the end. Practically whispering here. Then I have him, not publicly. Already in the fall of 1940, we continuously faced the question, shall we consider a breakup in relations with the USSR? At that time, I advised the Finnish government to negotiate and to gain time to act dilatory in this matter, because I always feared that Russia suddenly would attack Romania in the late fall and occupy the petroleum wells, and we would have not been ready in the late fall of 1940. If Russia indeed had taken Romania petroleum wells, then Germany would have been lost. It would have been requires just 60 Russian divisions to handle that matter. So, as you can see, Romania was very, very important, both from like an energetic standpoint, because they had the natural resources, and from a tactical standpoint, because they were just like the Polish somewhere between west and east, and the mountains, for example, the Carpathian Mountains, just offer a very nice shield to protect yourself against. I think this is also the reason the Germans might have allowed the Hungarians to take such a big part in Transylvania, because the mountains kind of end and start here. So this is how the mountains are in Romania, and this is the slice that basically Germany and Italy gave to Hungary. It was Hungary, sorry, Hungary. I keep using the Romanian pronunciation. But here, it's right beneath the mountains, you know, so they basically have a layer of protection regarding the east front. If Russia was to invade back in 1940 or 1941 Romania and take Moldova for itself, it would have been able to protect itself by having also the advantage of the Carpathian Mountains, as they would just have to basically defend themselves. So,
Herbst 1940 wäre uns ununterbrochen die Frage, soll man es auf einen Bruch ankommen lassen? Ich habe damals der finnischen Regierung immer geraten, zu verhandeln und Zeit zu gewinnen und die Sachen dilatorisch zu behandeln, weil ich immer eine Angst hatte, dass Russland im Spätherbst plötzlich Rumänien überfällt und sich in den Besitz der Petroleumquellen setzt. Und wir wären ja im Spätherbst 1940 noch nicht fertig gewesen. Wenn nun Russland die rumänischen Petroleumquellen besetzt hätte, dann wäre ja Deutschland verloren gewesen. Auch die, mit 60 russischen Divisionen war die Sache zu machen. Wir hatten in Rumänien ja.
In Romania, we had, of course, at that time no major units. The Romanian government had turned to us only recently, and what we did have there was laughable. They only had to occupy the petroleum wells. Of course, with our weapons, I could not start a war in September or October. That was out of the question. Naturally, the transfer to the east wasn't that far advanced yet. Of course, the units first had to reconsolidate in the west.
Damals noch weiter keine Verbände. Die rumänische Regierung hat sich ja spät an uns gewendet. Und das, was wir hatten, wäre ja lächerlich gewesen. Die brauchten nur die Petroleumquellen besetzen. Ich konnte im September oder Oktober mit unseren Waffen keinen Krieg mehr beginnen. Das war ja unmöglich. Wir hatten auch den Aufmarsch natürlich im Osten in keiner Weise so weit vorbereitet. Die Verbände mussten ja auch im Westen erst wieder konsolidiert werden. Es musste erst die Bewaffnung.
First, the armaments had to be taken care of, because we had to. Yes, we also had losses in our campaign in the west. It would have been impossible to attack before the spring of 1941. And if the Russians at the time, in the fall of 1940, had occupied Romania, taken the petroleum wells, then we would have been helpless in 1941.
Gebracht werden, denn letzten Endes haben wir ja auch mit den Opfern gebracht in unserem Westfeldzug. Das war ja Es wäre unmöglich gewesen, vor dem Frühjahr 1941 anzutreten. Und wenn nun der Russe damals im Herbst 1940 Rumänien besetzt hätte und sich in den Besitz der Petroleumquellen gebracht hätte, dann wären wir im Jahr 1941 viel groß gewesen. Wir haben eine große deutsche Produktion.
Hitler continues interrupting. We had huge German production, however, the demands of the Air Force, our Panzer Division, they are really huge. It is level of consumption that surpasses the imagination, and without the addition of 4 to 5 million tons of Romanian petroleum, we could have not have fought the war and would have had to let it be. And that was my big worry. So, here you have it. Here you basically have it. Here you have Hitler basically admitting to the fact that without Romania, without this help, World War II wouldn't have been a thing, or at least Germany would have been done fast, and something would have changed. The enemy would have become Russia indefinitely, because in the end Russia did become the enemy, but instead of starting another war, we got the Cold War due to fear of, you know, nuclear annihilation, obviously. But it's so fucking fascinating to now let's hear this actually.
Aber was allein die Luftwaffe verschlingt, was unsere Panzerdivisionen verschlingen, das ist denn doch etwas ganz Ungeheures. Es ist ein Verbrauch, der über alle Vorstellungen hinweggeht.
So, you know, you can only imagine. You can only imagine what any of this means, considering the fact that actually knowing that without Romania, World War II would have either ended faster, or at least the Holocaust would have ended faster. Or might not have even happened yet. But yeah, let's get back to Transylvania, because I want to focus there for, you know, for now, because as impressive as all this big war was, a child couldn't know that it was a world war. A child couldn't imagine that this was beyond him and beyond everything that he lived, because How could it be when you don't know what a war is, and all you see is basically man coming and taking over the place you live and the place, you know, you felt safe, sort of, because it was still 1940. And the technology that we have now was clearly lacking. So, and most of Romania was nothing but, obviously, peasants and peasant life, having only a few actual big centers of, you know, urban life, by only having had I said had, because at this time Cluj was under, you know, Hungarian rule. It didn't have many cities with over 100,000 people in it. So basically the most cultured or the most urban place was Bucharest. Because even back then it had over 1 million people. It was one of the biggest, at least here in the East. So you can probably try to imagine how it is living outside of a city, having, I think they didn't have, at least in the 1940s, at least 1940, they didn't have electricity, because as you can imagine, an invasion means cutting off basically all power supply, all road and obviously train supply and air supply for especially the big cities. So that meant that they had to live for a while without electricity. And it, I don't know how you or anyone nowadays would bode in a situation not having any electricity, not having, you know, anything electric to distract them from life, to put them at ease, or, you know, just to have something to do. Like, even listening to me talking now is something amazing, magic, basically. To someone from like 100 years ago. And when I say someone, I mean someone that wasn't an intellectual, someone that was just a simple man that didn't care to read because there were more pressing matters, like what do we eat this winter, what do we eat now, am I gonna have a child, am I gonna have a roof over my head, am I gonna have anything today, and especially being pushed into this world when you're 5 or 6 is terrifying. So with that said, I am willing to finally use some of the things that I have here in my folder, because I have an exact memory here from related by a friend of John's, and you know, basically I'm adding the details that he told me years and years ago before he passed away, because he kind of was warning us about not being grateful with what we have, since he lost his father, he lost basically all chances of having a normal childhood and being sent to a school that was now teaching a foreign language, basically, and being forced to adapt yourself to that, because you have to, and because if you don't you might just die, and do you really just want to die? I don't think anyone really wants just to die. So you can imagine the terrifying life of such a child. And of course there were many battles in and around Transylvania, because it was a big big place, so no one really cared for what they did, because you can look at any tragedies, they become either numbers, or we suddenly remember that they happened, we're terrified now, and that's it. Which is a sad state of mind, but it's a state of mind that people actually love to take advantage of, because that's basically what happens. Now, as I said, let's read a little bit here. This was something that was witnessed somewhere near Cluj in a small, well, a rather small village. Let me just get a sip of water first, because, you know, dry mouth after a while just talking. I was out with John. He was a rambunctious child. Blue eyes, black hair, didn't care for much. He only cared to vibe. Well, so did I. It was the one thing we cared to do. He lost his father. Well, he was unlucky, but that didn't stop him. Nor did the fact that he didn't get much love. How could he? Well, neither did I, because how could I when, well, we're surrounded, and I don't know by what or whom, but they don't seem to like us very much. So that's one way to look at it. I mean, so, you know, it's just a thought that was written here. Well, also so badly written, barely read it, but yeah. I had to read it a few times before the whole thing started, so, you know, don't worry about it. So I wouldn't bumble for 5 minutes trying to decipher what this child wanted to say, right? So, with that said, let's move on. My father tried to push me to write, learn to write. He said that school was a valuable skill. And, well, I learned something, a little. I know how to write this. And even the word that I used earlier, that sophisticated word, it was from one of my father's books. Yeah. I tried to teach John once. He didn't care much for reading or school. He loved animals, though. He simply knew how to handle them. I, on the other hand, don't know animals. Well, most of them scare me anyway. Yeah, it's simple. And from what my grandfather told me, this was, well, one of his few friends that he had back in the day. Many I heard passed way rather, well, young compared to him, since he, you know, died three, four years ago. His, well, his child, many of his childhood friends and people, you know, he grew up with in that village died around, you know, 30, 35, 40, 45. So many of them didn't even get to that pension or to retire. So that sucks, you know, having to, well, I mean, that's life in a way, having to bury your friends, I suppose. But he told me that he used to run on the hills around Cluj a lot, because you never knew when danger was around or struck. Airplanes would fly by. There was always someone shooting a gun around, and you didn't know towards whom. Who was the target? Who was the enemy? Who was there to hurt you, and who was there to, you know, oppress you, basically? Because you had no real chance at a normal life unless you would acclimate to, well, to basically Hungarian rules and the Hungarian language. And, you know, he went through school, tried to go through school like a normal child, but having no father also means having no active income, and to find a job for a woman, it was really hard. So whatever help they could get, it would be either from neighbors or family, or from one of his older brothers that was like 10 and 13. Actually, you know, they were in their teens. One or two of them, they could help by actually getting a job, any job, to do anything, to try to get some money to live another day, to see another day, to be something, or at least exist. And that's terrifying. So he couldn't rely on anyone, and he couldn't live a normal life. So of course, trying to teach a 7-year-old that's stubborn anything, especially in Hungarian, you know that you're not gonna basically, like, endear yourself to him or any of them, because how can you when suddenly they're forced to learn a different language and under a very strict rule and under very strict watch of the military? Because you have to remember that this wasn't a peaceful place they were living. Even though these were peaceful times, it was still a very, very dangerous place. And considering that it was World War II, it just couldn't be any other way. So this was the life, and having and living actually near Cluj and running around those fields and those places, and even trying to get to Cluj to, you know, find something to buy for your family, because you couldn't always, like, rely on people in the village. So you had to walk with your mother for miles and kilometers at a time to go to Cluj to try to find food, you know, so just like it was happening everywhere in Romania, the Holocaust was happening in Hungary and on Transylvanian soil, because they were executing Jews and gypsies and gay people on the streets. Cluj was again one of those big cities that had quite the large population of and concentration of Jews, and you can only imagine how terrifying it is going by hand hand in hand with your mother being 6-7 years old to Cluj and trying to, you know, find something to eat or take ingredients back home so you can make something to eat, and seeing trains of people screaming and dead bodies near the train station or anywhere where you could see a dead body back then, where when the Hungarians didn't care to give a shit about Romanians and they were doing war crime after war crime. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to like be like, oh, look at the war crimes, the Hungarians. It's war. It happens everywhere. Don't forget that the Japanese didn't get nuked because they were, oh, they just bombed Pearl Harbor and did some shit in China. And no, they were horrific fucking people and did some horrid shit, both in China and Korea. So this was really, really, and not just there, but you know, in the Isles too, but less talked there. It was fucked up. The Russians did a lot of fucked up things, killing Romanians in the 1940 while they had Moldova and Transnistria under their rule. And of course the Germans, the Italians, everyone in war commits war crimes. Even Americans committed war crimes when they finally got, for example, to Europe, and especially against the Nazis, because fuck the Nazis. But if you think about it, it's still a war crime. So now, walking through Cluj with, you know, like trains of Jewish people and gypsies, having probably seen dead bodies, women's bodies killed to the side of the roads somewhere, you know, where usually less people walk around, it would happen. It's very plausible, and it did definitely happen, you know, but no one reported or cared to, you know, document it, because they weren't dumb, they weren't stupid. They knew that if they documented it, they meant that they had to be, you know, responsible if they didn't win the war, because the winner of the war gets to decide the rules, obviously. So in this case, they were covering their butts, both Romania and, in this case, Hungary. So you have to remember that. Because as fucked up as it is, it wasn't done carelessly. They were quite smart about it, or tried to be smart about it. Good. Now, let's move on. So my grandfather was 7 years old, then he went, of course, into the second grade. Somehow he managed to get to the second grade, and in 1943, which, of course, yeah. This, if you want to read more about the Holocaust, there's a little bit of reading here to do on, you know, the page, Wikipedia page, regarding Romania and World War II. I highly suggest it that you do that. And, you know, we finish 1941 and get into 1942. Then we finish 1942 and now we're getting into 1943, which basically it starts the counter attack against the Germans after Hitler loses at Stalingrad. The Soviets troops basically retake a bunch of places and, you know, start a big counterattack. Of course, the Japanese and Americans start the fight in the Pacific. There's a lot of weird and bad things happening in 1943. Also, the Allies bomb Italy and Rome in July of 1943, July 19th, and they're, you know, basically advancing now that America basically split into two, fighting both on Pacific and on continental Europe, now having landed in Italy, and Italy surrendering on September 8th, 1943. This is where things get toasty, because on September 11th, Germans occupy Rome, and the next day they rescue Mussolini. But it's not really much, because on a month later, Italy declares war on Germany. So here's where things get weird, because we get into 1944, and what a year 1944 was. But these weren't easy years for a traumatized child living in Transylvania under Hungarian rule, right here by the border, a bit up north, right next to Cluj. And neither was what was following next, you know, because 1944 was a truly, truly terrifying year to be an 8-year-old and then a 9-year-old. And if losing your father when you're 5 and being under horrifying rule of someone else was terrifying, well, 1944 would definitely not change that. And here's where we say goodbye for now. Thank you for listening. If you're listening, if you watched live, thank you. Kisses to you. If you watched on YouTube, the same. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. We're gonna do more. We have still 8 episodes from this first season. Yes, this is on seasons. I have 6 seasons planned. This is the first of them, of the Quill podcast. And again, pretty much appreciated. Thank you for everything. See you next time, and bye bye.